Wrestling Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Liz Loza. Matt Harmon is here. Producer Brett is here. And we are moving onwards to week two, baby. But before we get into the meat of the matchups and talk to our special guest, we got to talk about some news. Matt, were you and Sam Darnold like on a bender in New York that I didn't know about? Did you take the red eye out of L.A. after Sunday's games and hang out with Sammy D?
I mean, I don't really like New York, so definitely did not do that. I can't claim any responsibility. I mean,
How about New Jersey? I mean, if you don't like New York and you like New Jersey, we got to talk about your priorities.
No, definitely. I don't know that would be like, I'm not a fan of New York, but I love spending times in the burbs down in New Jersey. No, I mean,
Short Hills Mall, what's up?
I can't claim responsibility for this particular situation.
So Sam Darnold has mono. And if you listen to everybody's favorite disappointed dad, Adam Gase, at the press conference, he had some real feels about it. But of course, what does this mean? I mean, the Jets just cannot catch a break. They can catch a cold. That was from dad refs all over the place. Dad jokes. So Quincy Enunwa, he is out for the remainder of the season with a neck injury. Now, if you remember, he sustained one in 2017 that also robbed him of that season. Why are you staring at me like that?
We're about to get to my favorite news item of the week.
That all-world talent Demaryius Thomas, comeback player of the year, was traded from your New England Patriots.
Whoa.
Traded from the New England Patriots to the New York Jets. And then upon being traded, as the ink was drying, got a hammy.
Well, I mean,
it's almost like the Patriots knew something.
Yeah, I did see one of the best, one of the tweets that are like, you ever see one, you're like, man, I wish I had thought of that.
Yeah.
Pat Thorman sent one out. I think he's with Establish the Run now with Evan Silva and all those guys. It was a picture of Bill Belichick laughing, and it was just Demaryius Thomas was carrying mono.
Oh.
Because obviously the story of Demaryius Thomas traded and then Sam Darnold being out with mono follows, you know, I think it's just a day or two apart from each other. Mm. Very funny. I got a chuckle.
So how do you
that.
I mean, are you crestfallen? I mean, it's not, you know, it's just a hamstring injury.
I mean,
you can really
be
beast on this offense.
Yeah, he could be back out there. This whole
on 11 personnel, right?
Like, yeah.
Okay, only let's out manage there our expectations.
Of course. I mean, I don't like this offense at all. I didn't like it even just based on what I saw from week one was not encouraging.
What don't you like about Jamison Crowder eating 14 of 17 targets and
that
putting up fewer than 100 yards, averaging like 7 yards per reception? That's your favorite kind of football,
I find
isn't
that
it?
I find that to be offensive. Like that's like PPR is ruining the sport type
of stuff. Get used to it because we're going to see nothing. Trevor Siemian, we need to add, will be replacing Sam Darnold under center. And the Wildcat out of Northwestern loves to check himself down. So it's going to be double-digit targets for Jamison Crowder again. And because we do our standard as a half-point PPR, you are looking at Jamison Crowder as like a top 30.
No.
Wide receiver.
Don't do it to yourself because one of these days you're going to get 4 for 21 and you're just gonna not like it.
I'm not saying we have to rank him. Well, I have to rank him somewhere. He is my wide receiver 32 heading into the week.
Wouldn't play him.
We also have to mention that Le'Veon Bell has a sore shoulder and MRI said that it's nothing serious, but that obviously affects his play or will affect his play. You have to manage it a little bit, making Crowder all the more interesting. Robbie Anderson has a horrible matchup. He was one of my slow starts for this week. Last week. He's going to match up against Denzel Ward. I also think, get ready. You're going to hate it. You're going to hate this more than Jamison Crowder.
I think I might know where you're going.
Ryan Griffin.
I knew you were going to say Ryan Griffin.
Tight end.
Because this ends up back at your Chris Herndon take, too.
Well, he's
playing every single snap out there.
He's suspended, but Ryan Griffin was on the field in week one for 94% of the team snaps. He almost had a touchdown. And let's not forget that the Cleveland Browns were torched by Delanie Walker in week one. So the matchup is good. He's $10 in Yahoo, as he well should be. Let's be real.
Yeah, right.
Like he's $10 in Yahoo DFS.
Yeah, sick. This whole offense is just like, it's becoming a stay away completely with Sam Darnold out. And also, I mean, you mentioned it, Adam Gase, give me a break with this guy. I mean,
I was like, and that is that. No damn parent on the planet hasn't that or that in their kids at some point.
I mean, he did learn under the John Fox school of it is what it is. That was one of John Fox's favorite press conference line that I spent an embarrassing amount of time this morning actually searching the internet for a John Fox it is what it is like press conference answer so that I could transpose the two together, but be that as it may.
What app do you use for that?
What app do I use?
Like, yeah, to transpose. Like, were you going to do the audio and mess with it and make a whole...
Oh, no, I'm not that good. I was probably just going to, like, open up iMovie and put the clips back to back.
I thought you were going to overlap the...
No, I would have had to enlist someone that's actually talented here to help me do that. I have very limited video editing abilities. But point being, I mean, there's no one more uninspiring than just Gase completely hunched over there. Like, I feel almost bad for Jets fans that they're, you know, maybe 8-8 season now looks like it's going to be a nice 5-11 sort of situation.
Breaking news, guys. Le'Veon Bell just tweeted, quote, "I got great news. My shoulder is fine, so no worries. Just had to make sure everything was ready to go for Monday night." Heart emoji, like prayer hands, like up emoji. Nice. Let's get it. So that's all you need
Let's
to know.
Let's get 3 yards of carry with Trevor Siemian under center against the Browns defense.
Well, I do think his receiving ability obviously will keep his fantasy floor high enough, and he's still a running back one option.
I mean, let's hope that Adam Gase can lose this slot receiver short target fetish and be like, if I'm gonna throw short passes, at least throw them to Le'Veon Bell, who's actually talented, whereas Jameson Crowder's like,
hey, Matt,
busted.
What's
when
up? Someone shows you who they are,
I mean, I'm not I said hopefully, but I don't actually, sometimes you say hopefully and you know inside there's no hope.
Poison, I've heard.
Hope is poison.
Browns know that. All right, let's talk about Hunter Henry, though, because talk about hope being poison, right? Like, bro missed all of last year with an ACL injury. In week one, he left the, you know, regulation time with knee soreness. I thought, because I was on Fearless Forecast for tight ends this week, that he was fine because he came back in overtime and caught a ball. But no, looks like he has something called a tibia plateau fracture in his left knee. Basically, it means his knee's messed up. And while he's not right now officially out for the season, we are going to have to imagine life without Hunter Henry in this offense for the time being. You would think like, oh, man, I was like, yeah, all my Mike Williams shares are going to skyrocket. This is going to make up for week one. Boo, not the case.
Nope.
Mike Williams left week one with a knee issue as well. Hasn't practiced. It's Thursday right now.
Yep.
Still hasn't practiced.
Yep.
That ain't good. So you know what that means, Matt.
I'm shocked that it doesn't mean that you skipped this podcast to drive a truck full of crystals down to the damn Chargers facility. This has been one of your better takes over the last year that I've known, been working with you, that the Chargers need to invest in some crystals, need to sage off that building that they're in down there.
Palo Santo.
Fix that place up.
The juju is not good in that place. I know. They need some quartz for real. But yes, I also feel like if there is, to your branding, a silver lining, it's Travis Benjamin time, baby.
Probably not.
And again, a very, very understandable $10 in DFS. He's got that 4.3 speed, played 52% of the snaps in week one. Obviously, okay, so we know this is going to be a lot of Austin Eckler. We saw that, right? Lots of dink and dunks because Philip Rivers at 40, however old he is, doesn't want to get slammed behind that offensive line. And I know, like, trench talk is boring talk, but it is the heartbeat from which all else flows, the mother river.
I like that. I mean, play literally starts at the trenches. Come on, give me a break.
But I do think Travis Benjamin is like I'm not going to mess with him in my redraft unless I'm real desperate, which some of my rosters may be. but in DFS, like, I don't know. I think it's a totally unchalk play.
Yeah, well, definitely won't be chalk. You can promise yourself
that.
You
win things. You're a disruptor.
That's true. Rivers does have the second most touchdown passes of 20 plus yards since the 2017 season.
Stat, man.
So he is a proven vertical passer. But yeah, I really think that if Travis Benjamin, like in the year 2019, is your only vertical threat, I do think that's going to mean a lot of getting the ball out quick. I think he got the ball out 2.69 seconds in week one. I think it could actually be faster in week two because
Jimmy Garoppolo beat that, by the way. He got the ball out fast as any quarterback.
Yeah, well, that's because we'll talk about Jimmy G later in the episode.
Just an interesting tidbit.
It is. And, you know, Rivers was sacked on 10.3% of his dropbacks in week one. I think, again, he's facing a much better pass rush this week, too. Mm-hmm. I think the Lions are legit with
Trey Flowers
and Mike Daniels. You know, I think those guys are massively improved over what they ran out last year. And I do think that this offense becomes, I'm not so much into Rivers because I think there could be a lot of sacks and mistakes, but I'm really interested in Keenan Allen, who is $24 in Yahoo DFS, which seems like quite a bargain for a guy that could probably push for 13 targets, especially because he's still that short area guy. Austin Eckler, as you mentioned. I mean, you don't want to see it happen because of injuries, but we always are more interested in highly concentrated offenses.
And Keenan Allen still has the speed, if Mike Williams is limited or missing time, to shake after the catch enough, right? Like, yeah, he can do both things, even if his role with Mike Williams on the field has been primarily to do the shorter stuff. So I think I put him in my DFS line. I don't know. I did it really late last night. This is a new segment that producer Brett has titled hashtag We Told You So. We're going to talk about Darius Geis. I didn't own it.
I did. I was out on Geis, but it wasn't because I thought he'd get injured again.
Well, he is.
Well, he is.
He actually had knee surgery this morning in Florida with Dr. James Andrews. So not good.
Dr. Andrews. You never want to hear that.
No. Well, maybe if he had done that the first time, by the way, he wouldn't have had all those setbacks. Yeah, like,
maybe.
Anyway,
maybe don't go to Washington's team of doctors when you need a surgery.
No, it's like going to Tijuana for birth control. Not Yikes. That I've ever done that.
You don't want to do that.
Anyway, so AP will not be a healthy scratch, despite the fact that Jay Gruden absolutely, to your phrasing, roasted him out of last week's game. He will, in fact, be active. I don't really want to mess with him because I don't think game flow is going to go his way. But I do think Chris Thompson, as gross as it is, he led Washington in targets in week one. He caught 7 of 10 for 68 yards. He's going to get those double-digit looks again in week two versus this new high-flying Dallas offense that Kellen Moore has completely opened up. Let's be honest, the Redskins are going to be playing catch-up for most of the season from what things are looking like. That means Chris Thompson, as long as he can stay healthy, is going to be in that low-end RB3 flex space.
Case Keenum has had his little moment in the sun for like the first quarter, and then it was like
with that Terry McLaurin nonsense.
That was cool, but that ended very quickly. And yeah, I think this offense is mostly going to be a train wreck. Thompson, it's worth noting, got a ton of his targets on the last few drives of that game. So I don't know. Thompson is a guy that, I mean, yeah, I'm with you. Of the two, I'm going to prefer him because I think this team's going to be bad, you know, for all the game flow reasons that we think. And I mean, even Peterson last year, he had 1,000 yards. But remember, he had that one game, I think, against the Eagles where he had like a 90-yard touchdown run and still finished under 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a lot of what we're looking at with Adrian Peterson this year. And oh, by the way, the offensive line is worse this year. They have Eric Flowers starting at a guard spot. They have some goofball out there at left tackle that's not Trent Williams. So, yeah, it's a tough spot for Adrian Peterson.
And Jordan Reed was concussed in week one. I don't know what his availability is for week two. I don't think they've decided on.
They haven't decided yet.
Protocol yet.
But it's looking, last I heard, it's looking optimistic. But, I mean, even then, like, Vernon Davis went out there and beasted because he's one of the three or four, like, ageless wonders in the NFL. Yeah, this Geis situation sucks, but it's all, I mean, at the same time, like, you know, I think he's, which is unfortunate, he's trending more towards like myth than anything else in fantasy because, you know, he goes out there, goes 10 for 18 yards in week one. I didn't think he looked that good this preseason. He really has had like that one awesome run that he got himself hurt on in the preseason last year, and that's it. And he plays on a,
it's too bad because he had one of the best stories heading into the draft, come literally working himself up from the bottom. It was the name of the neighborhood that he was from in Louisiana. And it was an incredibly inspiring story. Both Andy Behrens and I were very, very high on him because of his angry running style. But, you know,
here we are.
Yeah.
And I felt bad this morning hearing this news because I haven't been on Geis pretty much at any point during his NFL career, but I did like that he got really fiery with, I can't remember what, it was like a local radio station or something, was asking him about how people are calling him injury prone. And he really went in on like, I've had, you know, this one injury and like, that's it. You know, it's some complications coming after. And he really got feisty about it. And like, I was really hoping he was going to become like a fascinating character in the NFL. And then whoops, this happens.
Well, thank you, Matt, for going so deep on Geis. We are saved by Scott Pianowski, who is joining us. Welcome, Scott. I have a question for you. Whose unlikely departure has been upsetting you the most? Sam Darnold to mononucleosis or Christian Yelich to a fractured kneecap?
First of all, I'm not going to save anybody. I'm a terrible choice if you're in distress. But Look, I'm a Patriots fan, so throw your tomatoes at me. I kind of enjoy trolling the Jets a little bit. I don't want Sam Darnold to be sick for a long period of time because he's a talented football player. I want to see him play and play well. But
what do you think about Christian Yelich's knee fracture? I'm concerned about this kneecap issue.
Oh, I'm bummed about it because I have a bunch of Milwaukee Brewers shares. I bet all of the Cubs fans I could find. You were probably the only Cubs fan I know who I didn't bet the Brewers or the Cubs who would have a better season.
I mean, the Padres just took those Cubs to task last night. I was like, what's up, Joe Maddon? What's going on here? Petco Park, huh?
Yeah, I wonder, Joe Maddon was like everybody's favorite darling 5 or 6 years ago. I don't think everybody feels that way anymore. But, with the Jets, I just kind of take it in stride. I mean, how did they find a way to lose that game to Buffalo? They had in control. Darnold, of course, didn't play well, and maybe he already had the roots of this virus. I don't really know that much about mono. I somehow didn't contract it when I was a kid. And yes, I did kiss girls when I was in high school and college, but somehow avoided mononucleosis. But, Trevor Siemian's back in our life.
Yeah,
so that's
Scott,
pretty exciting.
I kissed girls, too, and never got mono. How about that? But let's talk about being jilted, because I will tell you, some of those ladies, they definitely jilted me. Scott, though, I want to know what player tilted you, and then which SOB jilted you?
Yeah, I guess the idea, the hook here with the tilted, is that we're not going to give up on the player. And, Tyler Lockett, hey, love you for the touchdown catch. What's up with two targets? I know Cincinnati was rolling coverage to him, but good teams, good coordinators, good organizations find a way to get their best players the ball. They need to be creative. And I'm just worried that Seattle has an offense that's buried, 5 years, 10 years behind the cycle. I mean, look at what happened in Arizona, right? I mean, last week, this is a Scott Barrett stat. Last week, David Johnson had more air yards in week one of last week than he did the whole previous season because the coaching staff was completely idiotic. I'm wondering if I made the assumption that Lockett would have to absorb a lot of those Doug Baldwin targets. And maybe Lockett will never be 140, 150 target guy, but maybe he'd get 100, 110 after week one. I know two is an outlier, but I'm worried that maybe Seattle doesn't know how to creatively get their best pass receiver the ball.
Yeah, I mean, you said it, good offensive coordinators. I don't think Brian Schottenheimer is a good offensive coordinator. It does seem that they focused on one thing in the offseason, that was throwing to their running backs, and they did manage to do that right. But I'm stubbornly believing in Tyler Lockett, of course. It is worth noting, too, that I don't think I've seen as many people talk about this, but William Jackson, their cornerback who was great in 2017, the Bengals cornerback. He was on Lockett for a decent amount of that game, and he's a really good player, whereas most of their players in the secondary are obviously not.
I think Lockett's going to have an incredible bounce back game. I don't know. I agree that you should just be tilted and not lose your mind. I think that the Steelers are heading back home. We know about Ben's road versus away splits, right? And I do think that this Seahawks Steelers tilt is going to be a little bit more high flying. I think the Steelers are going to come out throwing, try to make up for that awful laying down that they did on Sunday night. Lockett's going to see a bunch more. Plus, the coverage is Mike Hilton, and he is usually a, quote, thrown at player. So I think you don't need to worry about, and if my boy Will Disley misses more time with that knee injury, then all the more for Lockett to go around.
Scott's Patriots dropped 3 touchdowns through the slot on the Steelers in week one. And of course, Tyler Lockett took over 60% of his routes from the slot. So it's a good little matchup there.
Who's jilting you, Scott?
I feel silly for taking the bait. Corey Davis, I faded him first year because, I fade rookie receivers. And it looks like 2019 is going to be a terrible year to do that. But and then last year, he stepped up a little bit, but only the 4 touchdowns. It's Mariota. They want to play 1977 football. And then I kept seeing the price go down and go down and go down. I thought, maybe best ball. I don't have to call the shot. Maybe a wide receiver 4 or a flex guy. Maybe there could be the timing would be right. And I guess this passing tree is going to be maybe wider than I thought because I didn't anticipate A.J. Brown being a mouth to feed right away. And I wondered how much was left in the Nelani Walker tank. And those guys both played really well at Cleveland. I still don't like Mariota. Only 3 targets for Davis in the opener. And it's one thing when Lockett only gets targeted a handful of times, they're Russell Wilson targets. When Davis only gets targeted a handful of times, they're Marcus Mariota targets. Man, I loved Mariota 4 or 5 years ago. That's out the window now. Not only is Davis not playable for fantasy leagues, I think he's actually a low upside player you cut outright.
Yeah, I don't think he's an essential hold. Like, so I was on our pal Jake Seeley's podcast this week, and he asked me if Corey Davis is a bust. And I don't think he's a bust. Like, he's not a bad player. he's not worth fifth overall, like, you know, where he went in the NFL draft, but he's like an average starting receiver. And like you said, Scott, on an offense like this, an average starting receiver is not, this is really not a guy you're ever going to want to play.
He's turned over offensive coordinators nearly every year since he's been in the league. I don't think we disagree on that jilting at all, Scott. Team anti-Corey Davis. Matt, is my mustachioed boyfriend Aaron Rodgers tilting you or jilting you?
I think he's tilting me a little bit. I'm worried about this offense, though. Number one, I think Matt LaFleur, I wanted to buy in, but go ahead, Liz. I wanted to buy in on Matt LaFleur, you know, being a good hire. I thought I could talk myself into it, but that week one showing was so uninspiring. You know, they continued to run on first down, even when they would pass the running backs on first down, and it just wasn't an efficient. It was not
an
efficient
indecisive play.
Yes.
Play call, I thought.
Yeah. I think LaFleur even said today, like, I'd really like to get some better production on first down or whatever. And it's like, hey, how about you let Aaron Rodgers throw the damn ball downfield on first down every now and again? I saw this stat on Twitter today from Nick Olson, NFL. I think he's a Vikings writer. He said Aaron Rodgers' go-to receivers since the start of the 2018 season. Devontae Adams, 115 receptions. Throwing the ball out of play, 61 throwaways. Mm. Number three, Jimmy Graham, 58 catches. MVS, 42. And Randall Cobb, 38. So, yeah, you can make an argument that this offense actually isn't all that talented. But right now, I'm a little worried about Aaron Rodgers. I think it's going to be okay because it's Aaron Rodgers, but I'm a little troubled.
Are you also worried about the matchup against Minnesota?
Right. Like, it's not a great rebound spot. It's nice that it's back in Lambeau, but that Vikings defense looked so good against Atlanta. And this is like the classic week one thing. You know, you have to ask yourself which part of the equation of what you saw is true. Is the Vikings defense that good, or is the Falcons offense that bad, or can hashtag both things be true? Because I think that can be the case.
So Aaron Rodgers has you a little bit worried, but you're not ready to give up on him. Are you telling me that the Steelers, you're just off of completely now? They're jilting you?
I mean, I'm stupid enough to talk myself into Dante Moncrief at $10 in Yahoo DFS.
I mean,
ten targets.
I will not appreciate some Moncrief looks.
Like $1 per target this week, Liz. You had 10 targets in week one. He's $10 in Yahoo DFS.
That's like $3 a drop is what you're paying there, right? I mean,
you're pretty much right there too. But it goes back to the point. Talking about that week two game, Liz, I really think it could go over its projected total of 46.5.
Because hammer the over on that one. Hammer the over.
Because I mean,
says the shark.
Yeah. Because I mean, look at like the Seahawks secondary sucks too, right? Like Trey Flowers back there gives up 150 yards and a touchdown on 8 targets. All 8 of them were caught. I mean, I think that the Bengals really showed like, hey, our game, it wasn't like a game flow thing either. Their game plan was to go out and attack with the pass, and it worked. And maybe like Jadeveon Clowney another week in the system, that comes to fruition. So,
but that's still, they need the pass rush. The secondary is so bad, they need the pass rush to get there first.
Right. And this all just comes back to like, hey, so this game could be a shootout, but I'm a little worried that the Steelers offense just doesn't have the playmakers right now. And like Roethlisberger's another year older. And like, by the way, the whole like Roethlisberger's in the best shape of his life narrative, it didn't look like it in week one. He still looked like he's taken a step back. He's sluggish. I think, look, it could just be the fact that the Patriots are that good. They always take away number one receivers. So, of course, Juju didn't do much. It could just be a Patriots thing, and they always thump the Mike Tomlin Steelers. However, I have to admit, I think that there's a pretty good chance that this offense just isn't good anymore.
I'm still not giving up my Vance McDonald hope just yet, but
fair enough.
I hope that's not true because I have a ton of Connor and a ton of Juju. I think it's just the Patriots, for whatever reason, match up really well with the Steelers and Belichick's and Tomlin's head and these guys. And then, man, what a lack of fight. I mean, even getting down the goal line, the Steelers kicked a field goal to erase the deficit, you know, from 24 to 21 or whatever it was at that point. I mean, it just felt like we don't want to get shut out. We're giving up. And then, of course, they pressed the game late when they should have gotten on the bus and they almost got Juju hurt. Although I guess he's okay. He's off the injury list now. I would think the Steelers would bounce back here. As Matt said, I mean, Seattle is just trying. I mean, they made John Ross look like a superstar last week. They're just trying to give it away. I'm going to aggressively play in our staff DFS. I think I have Juju already dialed up, and I'm probably going to have Connor. And maybe I'm just doubling down because I have a lot of Juju and Connor and they're staples in my fantasy portfolio. But I think for whatever reason, these guys just don't play well against the Patriots. I'm tempted to throw that out.
So the player that's tilting me is Devin Singletary. I mean, this is a rookie, but still a rookie who has moved his way up the team's roster, up the depth chart, pushed LeSean McCoy out of Orchard Park. And I think a lot of people were expecting this ascent to continue immediately into week one and not see Frank Gore seeing the majority of touches. And while that is true, if you watch the game, Singletary's shake was on full display. He averaged 10.9 yards per touch, which was the best among running backs for the week. He ripped off two runs over 15 yards. That's not bad for a guy who had just four carries. And while, again, he may not have seen the touches, he outsnapped Frank Gore and TJ Yeldon by a large margin. He had 70% of the team's snaps. He also was third in team targets. Now, let's go not go crazy. This is the Buffalo Bills, but still third in team targets behind. He had six looks, caught five of those behind John Brown and Cole Beasley. When I look at the matchup and I look at how much he is doing and I look at the talent there and I factor in Frank Gore's age, and I think one of these players is stock up and one of these players is stock down, but against the Giants that was just gashed by the Cowboys, I am stock up all the way on Devin Singletary, and he is my RB27 for the week. In fact, I have him, fun fact, ranked ahead of Devonta Freeman. So,
you know, I agree with everything you said. Other than I think Singletary should be ranked even higher. I mean, look, he got the majority of the snaps. He got the majority of catches in this backfield. TJ Yeldon couldn't get on the field. And every one of Singletary's runs was a successful play. I mean, he's making a splash play on every carry. The Bills, they're a very progressive organization. Maybe they just wanted to go slow with Singletary with the touches, not overload him. The game did get a little bit out of hand early when the Jets had a multiple score lead. I think they know that Singletary's the guy. They want Gore to be the older statesman and the show him how to be a pro. And, you know, Gore, I mean, give him credit. He came into the league. He was injury prone and he's lasted as long as he has into age 36, maybe even a Hall of Fame career. So perfect guy to learn from. But I was encouraged by everything that Singletary did. You would like to obviously see more carries, especially when he's been as successful as he has. But the most snaps, the most opportunities in the passing game, which wasn't a guarantee. And all he did is succeed in the running game. That arrow is headed way up. I think he's going to be a difference maker this season. And I think he has an excellent chance to be a big difference maker in week two, whether it be for seasonal or DFS purposes.
That passing game usage is key, as you guys both said, because TJ Yeldon, like, he wasn't involved at all. And like TJ Yeldon's that like coach's catnip as a pass catcher. Mm. Like, he's going to go out there and like get it done, you know, and to see the Bills. Singletary is actually second on the team in routes in 36, only behind, of course, you know, the god John Brown. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was crucial going forward, because also it's worth noting that I was surprised when I went back and watched that game, because I was not interested in the Jets side at all, but I was interested in the Bills. They came out throwing the ball like on the majority of their dropbacks right away, like just going for it. And I thought that was pretty crucial. The only thing is, Josh Allen, I think, is going to suck up a lot of the rushing volume in this offense, because that guy, like, I heard a really great comparison that, like, he almost doesn't realize that he's playing NFL quarterback until like 2 seconds into the play. Like every he drops back, and then about 2 seconds in, he's like a fan that's been, oh, I'm playing NFL quarterback. And he just like starts running around. Yeah.
I love it.
You almost get the sense that he doesn't even know if he's over the line of scrimmage or not. Or it's like somebody hit the hyperspace button. And Alan's like, how did I get here? Can I still throw it? Is the third down? What are we doing?
And yet we find it endearing. We're not annoyed by it. It is a little bit endearing. So from Devin Singletary, who saw a lot of usage in the passing game, to Geronimo Allison, who has me jilted, but let's be honest, I've been on Team MVS since the preseason. Anyway, there's a goose egg for Geemo. Zero targets in week one. He was outsnapped by MVS. MVS had 66% of the snaps, Geemo 50% of the snaps. Yes, the majority of MVS's routes were run on the outside, but we know that he is versatile enough to play inside as well. I still will remain by saying that I think that he is just the better versatile player. The assumption that Geronimo Allison was going to move into Randall Cobb's position and absorb the 70-some targets that Cobb saw, I think is a complete fallacy. I'm not buying into it. I will say in week two, he has the better matchup. against whoever is, I mean, I don't know if it's like Mike Hughes or Jayron Kearse, who I think is the team safety, but like since Mackenzie Alexander has been injured, he hurt his elbow, like they've shuffled their DBs around a little bit. So I'm not sure exactly who Jimo is going to see, but I have to imagine the least efficient of those players is going to go Jimo's way. So the matchup is better, but still give me the talent. MVS is the most athletic player on this roster. And you heard Aaron Rodgers talking about his speed and how he has worked to adjust to his speed. So I think that is your number two behind Devontae Adams.
Geronimo Allison's not good. Like, he's not good. And it comes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, sure, if this offense was going to be good, if it was going to be a great offense under Aaron Rodgers, then yeah, we're interested in the third receiver or the fourth guy in the pecking order. But if it's this offense that's going to be kind of stuck in the mud here, you know, you're not interested in all the way down the target tree like that. It's pretty much just going to be Devontae Adams and like occasionally MVS.
Right. And maybe sometimes Jimmy Graham.
You make a great point that Green Bay used to be a brand name and maybe they're not now. And we have to accept that. And so it used to be any piece of the pie would be good. What tripped me up a little bit, I did prefer MVS too. And I like the way you're calling Allison GMO. So, you know, maybe if we get him a three-letter acronym, then maybe he can get back and play. But I was tripped up a little bit by how productive he was last year. He averaged like 61 yards a game. And I know, you know, you can get in trouble with just by looking at the box score and the overall production without context. And, you know, I get the idea that he probably didn't grade out well in your metrics, Matt, which is a big part of the problem. Just, I just think MVS has a higher upside anyway. But Green Bay, we get it through your mind. I mean, I don't even think Rodgers really played well last year. I think Adams' huge season was in spite of Rodgers. It doesn't seem like Rodgers is on the same page with this coaching staff. And so this is an offense now where it's like, okay, yeah, you know, I'll take their running back if they can establish Aaron Jones. Fine. We know Adams is a great player. I'm out on Jimmy Graham, and I'll be kind of on the fence on MVS. He needs to show me something before I see him as a must start. And I can't go deep on the pecking order. I can't go deep on the depth chart. That means Allison not only not startable, but maybe not even rosterable at the moment.
So, Scott, I want to ask you, is there a game that you're particularly interested in watching this Sunday? It better not be Monday's game because we spend too much time talking about those damn Jets.
It's, you know, I'm really excited. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm really excited to watch the Bengals play. I thought they played a very entertaining game at Seattle. We saw a lot of splashy plays in that game. And the way the Bengals, I know you can get, this is Narrative Street. I'm driving right down the middle of Narrative Street here. I love the way the Bengals offensive players talk about this offense, the way they talk about Zach Taylor. I wish the Packers would do this. I love even AJ Green, who isn't even a factor right now, is saying, yeah, this is the most modern, you know, efficient offense I've ever been a part
of. 15 years, baby. Again, yes.
Right. Apparently, you know, I thought they signed Marvin Lewis to a lifetime contract, but I guess that wasn't the case. So I'm excited about John Ross. I think I am. Andy Dalton right now is somebody I'm considering, not just in Superflex, but actually if your quarterback drove off the road like Jameis Winston, I don't know what he'll do Thursday night as we tape this, but Andy Dalton's like my insurance policy in a league. I think maybe Gio Bernard, who I was just laughing, you know, oh, he's never going to get Mixon's way. Well, they gave him a lot of money and you know, maybe Mixon's dinged up now. I'm excited to watch this team play. And man, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to show me something.
I mean, oh my God.
He's got the looks, he's got the contract, but why was Nick Mullins just as good as Garoppolo last year, an undrafted street kid who ends up, you know, shuttled in there? And Garoppolo, I thought, played very poorly against a Tampa Bay defense that should have been a good matchup on paper. I know the two Kittle touchdowns were called back. I know the receivers aren't great here.
The two great touchdowns were called back too. So
right, yeah,
they
yeah.
cancel each other
and
out.
Mostert had a touchdown called back too. So there were five touchdowns that weren't touchdowns. What's more frustrating than that? But I'd like to see Garoppolo show something. And the Cincinnati defense can certainly be beaten. As Matt says, they do have one quarterback of note, but I don't think it's overall a very deep defense. So I think this has a sneaky shootout potential. I think the total's in the mid-40s. I think this game will go over 50. And I'm talking myself into the Bengals right now.
I like both defenses as a play in DFS too, because they're cheap and I don't necessarily trust Andy Dalton. I like what Scott's saying about Andy Dalton. I'm, you know, Liz, I talked about this on our last, like a week ago podcast, not the Sunday night one, but the Thursday night one, when I was like, hey Liz, you know, I did this for you. I dropped John Ross for Chris Conley in the Scott Fishbowl.
Well,
I didn't get him back this week.
You got him back?
I didn't get him back this week. I've got Chris Conley sitting there looking at me.
Don't cry about that. Don't cry. It's not like he didn't have a good game.
I know. I didn't start either. Wouldn't have started either one of them. But my point being, I am intrigued.
Cool. So when John Ross hurts his foot for the 14th time, then you come crying to me.
But the only thing I'm trying to say by that is that I'm interested in this Bengals offense now, where I didn't think I would be a week ago. And The thing is, though, we know that Andy Dalton's bad under pressure. I really believe in the 49ers pass rush. Like, people are trying to write off that week one defensive performance as just an aberration and like, oh, it's just Jameis Winston. But Nick Bosa, like, just quietly, not as exciting as Marquise Brown, was very much like, hey, F practice, F training camp. I'm going to go out here and get a sack and hurry the quarterback a bunch, too.
The prince that was what?
The prince that was promised won Nick Bosa. So, I mean, I'm with Scott. I think this is an interesting game to watch because I think we're going to learn a lot about both teams.
Well, I am interested to hear which matchup you want to talk about.
Hell yeah, the love and support in this room. Kansas City at Oakland, I'm interested in. Obviously, it has the highest total on the board.
Yeah.
But Kansas City, the question is, what does the receiving core look like without Tyreek Hill in the mix? I'm still out on Sammy Watkins as like an every week wide receiver one, which seems to be the consensus opinion coming out of week one.
I'm so glad to hear you say that because I feel the same way.
I mean, we've seen this story before, man. We haven't seen 200 yards and 3 touchdowns before, but we've seen him have big games and then just go completely quiet. It still trips me up that Watkins has been a part of like the best offense in the NFL each of the last two seasons. Sure. And he's been an inconsistent producer and he's been an inconsistent player on film, which I think bothers me more than just the production wise. So that's one thing I want to watch. Want to watch Mecole Hardman in terms of his usage and everything like that.
But I'm interested. So are you, because there was a report that I believe came out via The Athletic that said that Mecole Hardman, especially as a rookie, was going to share snaps with DeAnthony Thomas in replacement of Tyreek Hill.
That's totally worth watching too. I think Hardman's a guy that I want to pick up and add on my rosters, but not play right
Thank
away
you.
Because I want to see that. Because Thomas was suspended in week one. But Hardman was the number two receiver over DeMarcus Robinson very clearly in week one, but it is worth watching DeAnthony Thomas, who was a late add. But the Oakland side, I think, is almost just as intriguing because I love Derek Carr this week. God help me. Carr was efficient. In week one, he completed 84% of his passes. Obviously, the Denver offense didn't drag him out of his shell or this entire Oakland offense, but I think the Chiefs offense will. In Carr's last two home games versus the Chiefs, he's thrown 3 touchdown passes in both games. So I think he's an awesome quarterback play this week. He's ranked as you chuckleheads have him at QB24 in the consensus rankings. I think he can be a top 10 play this week in a game that's going to shoot out and with legit weapons all over the place in Oakland.
I agree with Matt that now may be the best time to ever trade Watkins. I mean, how did this guy have 40 yards a game with the Rams? I know he joined the team right before the season. And then last year, you know, people act like, oh, you know, he's around the Kansas City passing game. How can he miss? Well, he had 3 touchdowns last year in 10 games. I mean, I know that Hill and Kelsey get a lot of it, but I've seen too much mediocre Watkins to all of a sudden christen him as a top 10 receiver. I would be asking around. There's a lot of guys I would say yes to. And the Raiders, man, I've been panning them, and I bet heavily on their under for the win total, and I made Gruden jokes. They had a very narrow tree in that win over Denver. First of all, an emphatic win.
Yeah.
But they're really focusing on getting Jacobs the ball, getting Williams the ball, getting Waller the ball. So these guys are going to have very high projectable floors week in, week out. And so say that for Gruden. I mean, we all thought when Antonio Brown was with the Raiders, okay, well, Gruden loves to feature his veteran receiver. Now, obviously, that's not in the mix. But Gruden is going to decide, okay, these are my horses. I'm going to get them the ball. I think they all have gains in value just based on that one game. I don't think Jacobs is a special player, but if he's going to get that much volume and that much of a market share, sure, I'm in. Williams, we know that he doesn't run the entire route tree. But I mean, again, if he's going to get 7 and 10 targets projectable every week, I'm in. I don't have many Waller shares. I think I have 1 or 2. And based on how many leagues I'm in, it's almost none. But man, he really sure looked the part Monday night. I think he's going to be a top 10 tight end the rest of the season.
I don't disagree with anything you guys have said. I am curious to see if anything bears out about the fact that Vic Fangio coached the game from the sidelines and not from the booth.
I think that is really an interesting note.
In terms of seeing the defense.
Was he in the building? Was he in the building? Because, man, the Broncos defense, man.
He was. That's the issue. Is that he was.
Von Miller and Chubb.
He was calling the game from the sidelines. So his vantage point may not have been an advantage. Mm-hmm. And so that there is. Because it makes no sense that Von Miller and Bradley Chubb were not able to get much more done, especially with the pieces missing and not necessarily. I mean, they looked like they coalesced, but there was not enough pressure done to that offensive line that had so much vulnerabilities.
I don't think they laundered. I don't think they laundered Derek Carr's jersey. I don't remember him getting hit. I remember him ever on the turf. And of course, if you play in Oakland, you know, they have that infield, right? It's like the last of the infield cutouts. We're going to lose it after this year, so let's enjoy it while it's there. But yeah, you've not touched at all. Man, did I get that game wrong. I thought Denver was one of the locks of the week, and obviously totally wrong.
My bold prediction was that the Denver defense was going to score more fantasy points than any Raiders, and that was really wrong.
So y'all ate it. We all ate it. But you know what? One of heading in. So, you know what? Matt has talked about his on again, off again relationship with the Panthers. And there was this whole long series about him
episodes,
finding love with the San Francisco 49ers.
Five
ultimately.
Episodes, quality length.
And we know about like my, Scott, you know about my affection for the Bears, how we are committed to one another. But sometimes you need to open things up. I got this little side piece team over here with the Rams. But like, I got to be honest, in watching the Rams and the Panthers, I was like, meh. I need a new side piece. Like, this is kind of boring. They're like all jazzy and new and full of themselves. And like, I like things that are a little bit broken. I like things that are willing to be vulnerable, that are willing to be authentic and real and not squeaky clean and polished and, you know, IG ready. And that team, and again, I like a project, clearly, is the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Wow. I thought you were going to go with the Texans here.
Both of them.
You've got Minshew fever.
I don't know what that means.
Gardner Minshew.
Oh, Minshew. Yeah.
I like to say Minshew.
I am very intrigued.
Yeah, well, you referred to a quarterback with a mustache earlier. I thought it was Minshew. I thought somehow Minshew was getting worked into that segment because, man, I love that guy. He's smart. He understands how absurd football is. And, you know, he'd rather not be playing because Foles, you know, got hurt. But I don't know. There's something. He really won the press conference.
DJ Chark said that he is, quote, fearless. And you saw that. And sure, I know you've got like a backup quarterback that comes out and blazes a defense because they haven't prepared for that quarterback. And I'm sure there's not so much Minshew tape out there. But this is interesting to me because one of the things I said heading into this season that I was most intrigued to see was John DeFilippo entering an offense that was supposed to be ultra conservative. And this is a guy who got flipping fired because he refused to keep the ball on the ground, right? So what is he going to do? I think Minshew is the best damn thing that's ever happened to this offense.
Oof.
At Houston. Wait for
I
it.
I love it. No,
at
I'm
Houston,
so in.
Coming off of a short week. They played on Monday night, an emotional game. They almost won. You could say they were going to be angry. You could also say that their J.J. Watt wasn't J.J. effing Watt in that game. No Jadeveon Clowney. They're going to be a little bit tired. Yeah, it works out for them that the game's at Houston. But Jacksonville, there are zero expectations for this team.
They cut a starting corner, the Houston Texans.
That's
did.
Right.
Bill O'Brien did like the one that thing too. Every coach wants to do, just cut some guy for one bad
Aaron
play.
Aaron Colvin, I'll see you later. Which is why, you know,
the
that
defense has been overrated for 4 years. By the way, Watt's great, but that defense has been overrated for several seasons.
While you know that I have mad love for Chris Connolly and his gorgeous catch radius, and I think that the marriage between Minshew and Connolly is going to be a flourishing one, Dede Westbrook, who I've been a little bit like, okay, you can take your little slot receiver, blah, blah, I think has an incredible matchup in this one. And he is the guy that I like a lot. And all of you Dede Westbrook truthers, now is the time to take your shot in this matchup. But this Jacksonville-Houston game is the most important game on the schedule for me, the one I am most excited to watch. It is like my two lovers vying for who's going to be the first one I text after midnight.
I love...
And the Bears don't
be on The Bachelorette.
I'm sorry? Would I be on
The Bachelorette? It sounds like
I don't think that my husband would be a fan of me being on The Bachelorette. I have a fantasy, as a side note, to be on The Bachelor.
Like the fantasy Bachelorette.
Maybe. You know, I do really want to go on The Bachelor as one of the like people he's wooing, but I want to like episode one say like, hey, here's the deal. I'm just going to be your like wing woman the whole time. Like, we're never going to hook up. I don't want to actually, I'm actually married, so don't worry about it. But I want you to take me on all these vacations. And then when we get the fantasy suite, like, I'm just going to eat cheese and drink champagne alone in the bathtub. And I'll give you all the dirt. You get rid of me. Like, I got down to the last three. I tell you which one is in for it, which one is most likely to shtup. I'm your mole, basically. And you can cut me before the final rose.
This is a proposal. It's kind of in, you know, faux entertainment anyway. I mean, those things are so produced and so scripted.
I want to be the mole on The Bachelor. and also eat all that damn cheese. Like, I'm all for like the hot tub shots in the beginning, but by like the end of the episode, it'll be obvious that all I was doing was drinking champagne and eating cheese, and I'll be sleeping in a snowsuit.
Yeah, you had me at eat all the cheese for sure.
All right, so Scott, in our quickest way possible, you lead up the DFS segment. Who's your bargain?
Rex Burkhead is the stone minimum. He's the one Patriot back where they can run or pass because they're all run with Michelle. They're all pass with White. Burkhead can do both things. We know they should name the score against Miami. My fate is Lamar Jackson. Just look, I mean, he's going to be really trendy now. I think last week would have been more about Miami sucking than Baltimore being good. Again, both things can be true, but I want to fade Jackson after the big week. Buy Burkhead at the minimum and get a different quarterback than Jackson.
Yikes. Oh, man. I hope you're wrong about that, Scott. My vomit bargain is Dante Moncrief, who I mentioned earlier. You get one target per dollar spent and maybe three drops per dollar spent on Dante Moncrief there. But again, good matchup against Trey Flowers, who allowed 150 yards and a touchdown, as I mentioned earlier. My fade is Philip Rivers. Liz, you and I kind of talked about this at the beginning of the podcast, but he's pretty expensive coming off a big week. I think people aren't quite caught up to the fact that this Lions defense might actually be able to put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And yeah, that just without any vertical threat and those massive issues, in my opinion, on the offensive line, Rivers is a guy I'm off this week.
Listen, if Travis Benjamin and Ryan Griffin weren't enough of ballsy bargains for me to give you, I'm going to throw one more out, though. Like, man, hope you don't do this. It's Deion Kane. Devin Funchess injured, out. Deion Kane showed the ability to flash with some big plays. We didn't think he'd be healthy enough to really be his full self and full potential until November, but he is showing up. He didn't see a ton of targets, but he's got the matchup against the Titans should be interesting. Again, I don't love it, but I do think it's a dart throw. And my fade is St. Drew Brees coming off of an outing in which he didn't bother to lob the ball over 20 yards until the fourth quarter. Short week on the road, doesn't get the benefit of the dome or that awful whistlehead character that stands behind him, whatever. I'm out with Drew Brees. Give me Jared Goff over Drew Brees, especially when the Rams have Aqib Talib healthy and in the defense.
I love Goff this week. I didn't realize how stark his home road splits were until this week either.
Well, what a good parallel too with Drew.
342 yards per game over the last 2 years when he's been at home. That's, I believe, the most, and his yards per attempt ranks only second to Drew Brees when he's at home.
There you go. So we will be back on Sunday night with our week 2 recap. Thank you so much, Scott, for joining us. You can follow Scott on Twitter at @Scott_Pianowski. I'm at @LizLoza_FF. And last but certainly not least is at @MattHarmon_BYB.
Depends who you ask.
That's true. We're out.